On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The state's powerful budget rating committee, the Joint Committee on Finance, announced its public hearing schedule on the state budget set for next month. The aim is to gather comments on what residents want prioritized in spending. The hearings, they kick off in Whitewater with three in-person events, one virtual, none, by the way, in Milwaukee. Should the legislature approve the governor's $91 billion budget plan? What parts do you support? What needs to change before the legislation reaches the governor's desk? It's 800-642-1234. LaTanya Johnson is a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee, representing residents from downtown Milwaukee to the city's western neighborhoods. She's a member of the Joint Finance Committee. State Senator Johnson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, before we get to the budget, first let's talk vaccines. Milwaukee County is still lagging well behind most of the state when it comes to the percentage of residents who've received their first COVID dose. Why is Milwaukee so behind on shots into arms?
You know, I think it has a lot to do with the protocols, with the number of individuals that have been approved to take the shots, and also just the large statistical size, making sure that we can get people in for those appointments, and making sure that once we get them in, it's recorded. I've heard a lot of people who are not basically frontline workers or essential workers who are saying they're just waiting their turn to get the shots. So as soon as more shots become available, I assume that we'll see those numbers escalate and take off.
I'm wondering what you think of Wisconsin's vaccine distribution formula. We saw, as you mentioned, the state prioritizing vaccines for teachers and other workers before, you know, people with medical conditions that put them at risk. Do you agree with the formula?
I do agree that the formula was a little bit, well, it was business heavy. Of course, we needed our frontline workers to be vaccinated, you know, in the beginning. But the second batch, because it includes teachers, child care providers, all frontline workers, including those that work in grocery stores, it's a larger percentage of individuals. And so we have to get those vaccinated first before we can move on to the third phase. It's essential that we get our teachers vaccinated. We have to get the schools open back up. And although they say that, you know, the vaccinations are not needed to safely open the schools, I can understand our teachers wanting to be safe before they go back into the classroom, especially encountering so many children, and especially in large metropolitan areas like Milwaukee, where, you know, those classes were packed to the rims before COVID-19, and you're going to have the same kids coming back. There's no additional space for them to isolate those kids or to safely social distance because the rooms are so crowded and you only have a certain amount of teachers. So making sure that they can safely reopen is extremely important. We do want to get to those individuals, especially those with pre-existing conditions. Unfortunately, this batch that we have now is just going to take a little extra time because the numbers are so large.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Milwaukee State Senator LaTanya Johnson, Democratic member of the legislature's Budget Writing Committee. We're going to be looking here at the budget. You can join in with what you would like to see, 800-642-1234. Let's look closely at this upcoming budget. What are your top line priorities for the next budget?
It's a $91 billion budget. Let's first start there. So the budget is extremely big. Some of the priorities that I'm looking forward to trying to defend and keep in the budget is the money for education. It maintains the two-third state funding promise, but it also adds an additional $750 per pupil for all students. But for those schools that are economically challenged or come from disadvantaged communities, it adds an additional $75 per pupil for each disadvantaged student, that's important, especially in communities where families are having to send their kids out to school outside of the community for a quality education. We all know that there are differences in between our school systems, especially when you come from Milwaukee Public Schools versus Mequon Public Schools. There's a huge disparity because, for example, in some of the zip codes, one of the zip codes that I represent, 53206, the median resale value of a home in that area is just $4,300. So poverty is very rampant in that area. So making sure that we can start to begin to give these kids some type of equitable education is important. But it also includes $54 million in the educational fund for student mental health programs and supports. And that's extremely, extremely important because of COVID-19. We knew that our students were seeing mental health issues before the pandemic, but now those have just been exacerbated. But also for higher education, expanding Bucky's Promise. Bucky's Promise will allow kids, young adults, to go to college for free at any UW system if your parents earn under $60,000 a year. That's extremely, extremely important for Wisconsin, being able to allow those students to go to college for free. Now, it just covers tuition and segregated fees, but and that's after federal aid, but that still provides opportunities for those kids who don't have the resources to go. So those are some of the things that I'm just really, really excited to see in this budget, and I hope has the opportunity to stay.
State Senator LaTonya Johnson, I want to circle back to what you just said there on the outset, that this $91 billion budget is extremely big. Is that worrisome to you? Is that worrisome that by the end of the biennium, the state would spend nearly all its $1.9 billion in reserves on this budget?
No, it doesn't bother me because there are certain things that we can do to garner additional dollars from the federal government. For example, by expanding BadgerCare, if we expanded BadgerCare, the state would save $630 million that we're paying out in state taxpayer funds. And this is money that our constituents have already paid into the system that would come back that could be utilized to help pay for some of these items. And it's also been discovered that by expanding BadgerCare, not only would we save taxpayers the $630 million, but we would get an additional $1 billion in federal funding over the next 2 years if we just expand BadgerCare. So we can't be concerned about, you know, spending our state's budget if we're willing to leave $1.6 billion on the table. And that's the frustrating thing for me as a Democrat, is to see all of this money on the table that my Republican colleagues are just acting like it doesn't exist.
One of your Republican colleagues, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, in the Assembly, says this is a non-starter. And so, you know, the savings would be temporary. What is the reasoning that the higher reimbursement rate may be not there in the days in the future? Why else are your Republican colleagues holding back on expansion?
Well, that's an excellent question, because they have been saying that this was a temporary fix ever since Obamacare first came into existence. And we see that states continue to get reimbursed for those costs. Up to 38 states, I believe, have expanded their Medicaid program. Not to mention, we're in a pandemic. It would offer over 90,000 more people insurance that wouldn't qualify now and are probably paying out of pocket or just simply don't have coverage. They keep using the same excuse, and it's time out for that excuse, because we can't afford to keep leaving this money on the table what I've noticed about my Republican colleagues is that if you are in need and you are a constituent and, you know, you're economically disadvantaged, it's almost as if you're invisible. There is no interest in trying to help you basically be able to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And it's unfortunate, it's aggravating, and it's infuriating because this state cannot afford to leave $1.6 billion on the table.
We're talking with State Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee. What kind of help are you seeking from the state government this year? What are your top priorities for elected officials? What are our state's greatest challenges ahead, and what will it cost to fix them? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers' proposed 2021 to 2023 state budget includes accepting a federally funded expansion of Medicaid, as we've been talking about. Last week, the legislature's Joint Finance Committee requested the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau provide an estimate of the incentive money Wisconsin would receive under the new American Rescue Plan. And the memo says Wisconsin would get just over an additional $1 billion over 2 years if we would go with the expansion. What is your take on this? Do you live in Milwaukee? What questions do you have for State Senator LaTanya Johnson? 800-642-1234. And State Senator Johnson is with us for 10 more minutes. The governor unveiled his budget plan weeks before President Biden on Thursday signed the nearly $2 trillion relief package. How much does the relief package change your priorities for the state budget?
You know, it changes my priority for the state budget just somewhat, because Governor Evers did an excellent job by creating the people's budget, talking to people virtually, organizations, trying to figure out what the state needed. Now, in the $5 billion that we're going to get through the American Rescue Package Act, we'll get $5 billion, but $3 billion will be allocated to the governor to spend solely on his own regard for what he sees that is most important for Wisconsin. For example, this is one-time money to help our state recover from the pandemic, to vaccinate our population, to improve our public health infrastructure, to help make our schools safe. And so this money will be able to be allocated at his discretion, which is exceptionally nice, because then he doesn't have to come to the legislature and ask for permission from the Joint Finance Committee to distribute the money, which makes it so much easier for his administration to do what's necessary for the people of Wisconsin. So I'm exceptionally happy about that. Because we have seen the Joint Finance Committee drag its feet on dollars that the governor has requested in previous sessions. So this just makes his job a lot easier.
Along those lines, Republicans are pushing for the legislature to have more control, to have more say over the new federal relief aid dollars. What are your thoughts on that idea?
I think it's a horrible idea, because we've seen what the Joint Finance Committee has done with the dollars that we're in charge of. Never before has the Joint Finance Committee wanted to have so much control over spending until Governor Evers was elected. And a lot of the decisions that Governor Evers has made to try and bring more federal dollars into the state, he's gotten pushback along the way. For example, before the legislature met during the pandemic last year to remove the one-week waiting period for unemployment benefits, my Republican colleagues in leadership dragged their feet before they brought us back in session. And the state missed out on $25 million that could have been spent to help prolong the benefits or to help pay more individuals, that were having to rely on unemployment were leaving $1.6 billion even right now on the table by not expanding BadgerCare. My Republican-led colleagues continue to show that physical conservative for them is just being plain stupid when it comes to taxpayer dollars. And so not allowing Governor Evers to have to rely on what they feel is important for Wisconsinites is extremely important in order to get more people in the state the assistance and the help that they need to recover from this pandemic.
Going back to crafting the state budget here for just a moment, the Joint Finance Committee announced its budget hearings, where they will be, when they're scheduled next month. None of the hearings are in Milwaukee. How did you react to that?
At first there was disgust, there was anger, but, you know, I understand. And the reason that I say that I understand, it's not safe right now for us to have large gatherings and, you know, rooms not big enough to hold all of these people and allow them to be social distance. Even though there's a mask mandate in the state capitol, my Republican colleagues don't abide by that. So you know that there are going to be people who show up that are not going to be masked, and that just puts the public more at risk. So those virtual, everything, to be honest, should be virtual in order to keep the community safe. But unfortunately, my colleagues have, you know, made some of these hearings in person, and so that's the frustrating part. If there was a hearing in Milwaukee, no doubt those hearings would be packed. And that puts the community more at risk, especially for areas where we have large communities of colors that are most predispositioned and vulnerable to this pandemic. I would rather go to these virtual meetings rather than have, you know, so many of our vulnerable members from Milwaukee show up to these meetings. I'd rather risk my safety than having to risk so many of theirs. So until everyone can get vaccinated, until we can make sure that everyone is masked and, you know, remaining a safe environment for their neighbors, I'm happy that we're not hosting a meeting in Milwaukee. I just feel that it's for the safety of my constituents.
We're talking about state politics with Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson on the line, who represents portions of Milwaukee. Still time for your questions, 800-642-1234. State Senator, Governor Evers says schools should consider summer classes or starting classes earlier this fall to help students catch up from all of the pandemic learning loss. What would you support happening for Milwaukee public schools?
I do agree that our children are going to be in desperate need of summer school in order to recover. You know, virtual learning has been a challenge for everybody, from the students to the parents. I know Milwaukee Public Schools normally anticipates about 7,000 kids for summer school, and this year they're expecting about 23,000, especially for our children of color. We know that they lag behind in terms of the educational gap. So being able to make sure that we can provide those services to catch our kids up is extremely, extremely important. And so I want to see summer school go forward. I want to see those children be able to be in a classroom, you know, because the educational divide is so wide for our kids of color. Now, the concern for a lot of the parents is that you do have parents that are afraid to send their kids back to school for all, you know, justifiable reasons, especially kids of color, because the parents can't afford, due to pre-existing conditions or work concerns, to be infected with the virus. So we have to make sure that we provide the resources necessary, the vaccinations, the healthcare coverage that these families are going to need in order to recover from this pandemic. But most importantly, in order to trust that the government will be there and able to help provide services if those families are inflicted.
State Senator, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and you have a wonderful day.
You too. LaTanya Johnson is a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee. She represents residents from downtown Milwaukee to the city's western neighborhoods, first elected to the state senate in 2016. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with a representative from the Public Service Commission to discuss high-speed internet expansion. Do you have adequate internet options where you live? 800-642-1234 to join in on broadband. We'll get back to State Cap right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A six-month pilot program in Vilas County is using tethered drones to boost internet speeds for students in the Northland Pine School District in rural northern Wisconsin. As reported on WPR last week, tricked-out drones can extend the reach of cell phone tower internet connections. It's one of the latest developments in an effort to solve this broadband access conundrum. Is internet service in your area sluggish or non-existent? How have you been able to manage remote work and education for your family? Can you afford internet service? What remedies would you like to see Wisconsin offer? 800-642-1234. Alyssa Kenny is Director of Digital Access for the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. Alyssa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, first of all, line us up with some data. Do you know how many people lack internet access in Wisconsin?
So the number of people, I think you want to separate a little bit how many people don't have adequate internet and how many people don't have any. But about 400,000 people don't have regular access to sort of the broadband standard of 25 megabits by 3.
And how has that changed over time, or has that been a really steady number?
No, that number's continued to decline. It's been it was about well over a million people 5 years ago, and so each year we're increasing connectivity for more people. At the same time, more people are using the internet and more people have higher demands for better speed and access, and so. Both pieces are increasing together.
Yeah. What pieces to the puzzle have you been able to solve that is causing the decline in and so more people have access to high-speed internet?
So one of the most effective things that the state has done is our broadband grant expansion program. So over the last 4 years, we've helped deploy service to about 130,000 locations in this state. And that's it's also leveraged an additional $68 million. And so that's been one of the most strikingly effective ways to get residents' internet is to partner with providers and provide grants to really target construction and infrastructure projects in those unserved areas of the state.
Can you explain a little bit who can apply for these grants?
So the Public Service Commission's broadband expansion grants can be applied for by an internet service provider or an organization, or it can be applied for by a municipality or a public subdivision if they're working in partnership with a provider. So really a lot of options. Internet service provider is the most common applicant, but we've had economic development corporations, school districts, and others that have been the lead with providers as partners.
Over the years in this grant program, what has the application load been like? What has the interest been?
So the interest continues to be really high. The fiscal year 21, the commission has about $24 million to distribute, and they had over $62 million in requests. And so the commission has continue to have about at least twice as many requests for funding as there is resources available. And I guess this year is almost three times as much.
What do you tell those applicants who are not able to get a grant? I mean, where do they go?
So many of them reapply in future years. Some of them look for federal funding. Some of them seek private funding, you know, additional local funding from the communities. In some cases, the internet service provider might decide that some of the locations are possible to be connected through the company and the private, you know, money that the company might provide. But many people are stuck waiting.
Let's bring in David now, joining us from Boscobel. David, what is your internet situation like?
Yeah, I live right out 3 miles outside of Boscobel, and I have zero internet unless I use a Wi-Fi hotspot from a cellular carrier. And I can tell you, through the pandemic, trying to work from home, once you hit your monthly data cap, it slows way down and it's really non-existent. Service is provided by CenturyLink. And when I had called them a couple years ago about when I would be able to get high-speed broadband, I was told point blank by the representative on the phone that it was up to me to mobilize, you know, a number of people in my area. And if I got a sufficient enough number, they would deploy the broadband, but they never, ever even said how many people it would take. So I know that they get federal grant money or federal money from the FCC, Universal Service Programs, and they do absolutely nothing in our rural areas, and it's really a very sad situation.
David, thanks. Alyssa, David quite defeated there, and CenturyLink says, you know, get a number of people together and then maybe.
David, I'm sorry. That sounds really frustrating. And I think there's a lot of Wisconsin residents and that similar situation. This is a really significant challenge that the internet has been allowed to basically operate as something that works in the market. And so we've decided to provide service, or previously we've been providing service where there's a market or return on investment. And I think now we're really moving, and with the governor's budget this year, to looking at a grant program that's robust enough. So it's not just where the market will get a provider the return on investment, but there's enough grant dollars that will be able to be there so people can get the capital investment they need. But it's still challenging, and we're still very dependent on internet service providers to want to provide that service and to be willing to build the infrastructure to people who need it.
If you live in an area that lacks the internet, like David said there, is there anything that you can do to encourage a company or an organization to apply for one of these grants?
Well, you know, David spoke to it well. It's a part of it's about community organizing and getting your neighbors contacted, your elected officials, and knowing that you're, you know, looking for more service where you live, partnering with internet service providers. And I will say the state of Wisconsin, there's incumbent providers, but there's other internet service providers that people might reach out to. So there might be the internet service provider that provides your phone service or that has some facilities, but there could be a fixed wireless provider, or there could be a provider nearby that's willing to build into your area.
Let's bring in Sam now in Trempealeau. Sam, what can you share? And we can't hear Sam. How about Karen in Door County? Karen, what would you like to ask?
I would like to know why there is no talk of fiber optic service, given that we know how dangerous all of this wireless is to our wildlife and to our own personal health, our own vibrational health. Why are all of these internet towers just assumed that everybody wants this? I'm not one of those people. I don't want wireless service blaring all over my beautiful forest and disturbing the wildlife that lives there.
All right, Karen, thank you. So Karen, wondering why not venture into fiber optics, Alyssa?
And so the Public Service Commission has mostly pivoted a lot of their grant dollars, and much of the construction in the state right now is fiber. I think there's an idea that fiber is very future-proof. It provides symmetrical service, so that means sort of the up and down speeds are often the same. It doesn't need the types of upgrades, and it's a much more scalable technology. There are, however, places in the state that fiber is incredibly expensive, maybe because of granite in the ground or river bluffs or things, and that a fixed wireless solution might really be the either the only possible solution or the much more economical. But there really has been a strong move in the grant program and in the construction and what you see nationally towards fiber infrastructure. It's much more resilient and future-proof.
Alyssa Kenny is Director of Digital Access for the state's Public Service Commission. We're discussing barriers to broadband, what is being done to expand access, and getting your insights at 800-642-1234. Brett is joining us from Norwalk. Hi, Brett.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question revolves around the previous caller from Boscobel had mentioned the same with his family as mine is our only access is cellular. When the pandemic first began, the cellular companies removed that cap that he talked about, which pretty much eliminates the rest of your month of internet access. Is that really a financial burden on the cellular companies to remove that cap, or is it a business model placing that cap so the customer will come back and pay another $30 or $40 to get more service throughout the rest of the billing cycle? Is it a possibility they could open that floodgate up again?
And Brett, very quickly here, is that cap still on or off, in your particular situation?
It was, I believe it lasted for 6 months, and It is back in place now. The cap does come back on now.
What impact does that have on you and your work and livelihood?
My wife was a stay-at-home mom, and internet marketing is what she does. And if one of the children forget to leave the TV on and it streams TV for 3 or 4 hours, next thing you know, we've got 3 weeks or 2 weeks left of the billing cycle before we're able to get back access again where she can video conference and things with customers.
Wow, so huge implications. Alyssa, what about this cap? What can you say?
Yeah, so these data caps are incredibly difficult for households. And I know at the beginning of the pandemic, a number of providers signed the Keeping America's Connected Pledge and lifted those caps. But we still see thousands and thousands of households throughout the state essentially running out of data throughout the month. And those data caps are really, there certainly is some cost to internet service providers for the transit of bits. But the return that they might be getting compared with the cost that they're charging for data might not be exactly a good match. But it's certainly one of the things that our office looks at, and hoping to have people have internet without data caps is our goal. And the projects that we fund don't have data caps.
We have the Public Service Commission's Alyssa Kenny, Director of Digital Access. We're checking in on efforts to shore up the digital divide in our state. Are you a town or county official hoping to create a public internet utility? What would you like to do? Would you like to see municipalities or even the state create a public internet utility? 800-642-1234. Still time to talk. Back in a minute for more Stay Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about broadband. Governor Evers, in his State of the State address in January, declared 2021 the year of broadband access. According to a research group that favors expanded broadband called Broadband Now, Wisconsin ranks 30th in the nation for broadband access. Alyssa Kenny is Director of Digital Access for the PSC, the Public Service Commission, and she's with us for 10 more minutes. Sarah is joining us from Wautoma. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi there. Good morning. I'm just calling because my parents also live in a very rural area, and David's comments before just reminded me of the past 12 years of trying to get my parents reliable internet. They just actually started to become Starlink beta testers, And I'm just kind of wondering, I mean, they've had phenomenal internet for the first time ever, over 130 megabits per second consistently. I'm wondering how that kind of ties into this conversation about broadband and if that's a consideration as well.
Sarah, thank you. Explain Starlink for us first, Alyssa.
Sure. Starlink is a low orbit satellite. People are probably familiar with the company or might be familiar with the company SpaceX. And so they launch hundreds and hundreds of low orbit satellites about 544 kilometers above the Earth. And people get their internet through satellite. And sometimes these Starlink is different because it's a low orbit versus a high orbit satellite. So that latency or that slow time, that sort of lag that some people experience with satellite is reduced. So that's so great to hear that people are getting Starlink service in the state and that the speed is there. I know with all satellite, there's a little bit of dependency on things like weather and the foliage around your home and your view of the sky. And so it's wonderful to hear that more people are able to access that service.
What is the future of Starlink in Wisconsin?
So Starlink is mostly active as a beta offering in the northern half above Highway 10. As they continue to launch satellites, we'll see them sort of move their service into the southern tier of the state. And again, it really has a certain, folks can't have too much foliage. The household can't, probably needs to be, not so concerned about weather. And we're still in the beta testing. So we'll see sort of what a whole year of speed data is going to tell us about the quality of this service. But it's so good to hear that it's so far been really great for her family.
Let's bring in Matt now in Nisida. Matt, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to point out we were able to actually take advantage of one of those grant programs. We went from with TDS north of Nisida from 1 megabyte per second to 10 on DSL, which is great. It's usable, certainly not 25, but we were able to work from home with the 10 megabytes per second. So that's been recent and awesome. And then also, I'm wondering if the state's looking at any kind of subsidy potentially for people who are able to get Starlink and don't have any other good options.
So the state doesn't have any particular subsidies set up for Starlink service. There is in the proposed governor's budget a line extension grant program that's proposed that would provide households that have what I would call that 100-yard problem, so the long driveway or the space, between kind of where the internet is and where their home is, there's a up to $4,000 individual home grant program that's proposed in the current governor's budget. And so that wouldn't necessarily subsidize Starlink, but that would help a number of households get those last few hundred feet to get internet access.
How problematic are those last few hundred feet?
They can be pretty problematic if somebody's house was built after the internet was put in, or if for whatever reason they just didn't get service or they have a long driveway. There's a number of households throughout the state, thousands and thousands of households that are, the internet is so close, yet it's, $10,000 away, or it's a certain amount. So this grant program would help many of those households close that small gap.
I want to look at municipal broadband. This budget would also make it easier for municipalities to create their own broadband services. Reedsburg, Sun Prairie have done this in the past, but the laws have become more restrictive since then. Why is it hard for local governments to launch an internet utility?
So there's a number of current barriers that make it so the municipality needs to, do a cost analysis and some surveying. And then I think municipalities, so those barriers are significant and they cost time and energy. And then in addition to that, when there's a lot of barriers, I think communities feel uncertain that they're doing things correctly and want to make sure that they are staying within the law. And so reducing those barriers would allow more communities to really deeply explore providing their own service. And it would also help them access those grant dollars without a provider partner. And I think this is really critical because as we're hearing, there's places that current internet service providers do not want to serve. There's not enough return on investment. It's not in their business model to invest there. And those communities should have the opportunity to build their own internet and provide service to their residents without so many statutory barriers. And so removing those barriers is important, and giving those communities access to grant dollars like the internet service providers is an important provision in the governor's budget.
Alyssa Kenny with us, Director of Digital Access for the PSC, the Public Service Commission. We're discussing the state of broadband access, what happens in the governor's budget proposal on broadband, what comes next in expanding access to high-speed internet across the state. With your situations, your questions, 800-642-1234. Alyssa, what has the governor's task force on broadband access accomplished since it first formed last July? What has it done?
So the governor's task force on broadband, their first annual report will be out June 30th of this year. They have spent a lot of their first year learning as a group, working on setting new goals, exploring municipal broadband, looking at different policies and practices. They also have a data team that's really looking at what data are we collecting in the state around affordability, access, and adequacy. Things like those data caps have come up. So the task force is really trying to deeply explore some of these sticky issues so they can create a report that's going to make some recommendations to the governor by June to really help unstick some of these things that we're hearing about.
Our neighbor, Minnesota, is often held up as a leader in state efforts to expand broadband. Have you learned anything from the Minnesota model in this journey to improve connectivity?
Yeah, so the border-to-border program in Minnesota, I think, has had quite a bit of success. And I think one of the things that is important in Minnesota is they have a really exceptional foundation, the Blandon Foundation, that's really helped rural communities with their planning and really digging in on what the community needs and how broadband might help them get that. And one of the things we also see in the governor's budget is this broadband planning and leadership grant program. And that's designed in some ways to model off of Minnesota's, to not just provide infrastructure dollars, but to provide communities the technical assistance and some money to really create those plans and to really dig in deeply about what they need as a community and what they might want from a provider partner. And so I do think that there's things to learn in Minnesota and that the governor's budget reflects some of those best practices.
We only have a few seconds left, but the stimulus package has billions upon billions of dollars for funding broadband in some way, shape, or form. Do you know how much of this money is going to come to Wisconsin?
It's hard to predict yet. It looks like each state will get $100 million for some capital infrastructure for remote learning and healthcare that certainly could be and would likely be infrastructure dollars for broadband. And so that's, with the current guidance, my best guess. And then there's other money for E-rate in different categories. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to really close these gaps quickly in the upcoming years.
Alyssa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for your time. We're really working to make broadband more accessible, affordable, and resilient in Wisconsin.
Alyssa Kenny is Director of Digital Access for the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.